Welcome back to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick. Dialogue is an exchange about culture straight from the soul. More than 70 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the groundbreaking case Brown v. Board of Education, racially desegregating schools across America. In 1956, Thurgood Marshall, the lead attorney who argued before the court, spoke about the decision at the University of Illinois. Illinois Public Media was there.
There is no power the Supreme Court of the United States has, and I, for example, would be one who would oppose any such power to tell you that you have to like or associate with somebody you don't want to associate with. Anybody has a right to say, I do not want to go to school with a Negro. Anybody has a right to say, I will not go to college with a Negro. But nobody has a right to say that that Negro can't go to my college. If you don't want to go to college with Negroes, get out. You go from college to college, you end up there are no colleges where there aren't Negroes. You still have your constitutional right to stay away from college and die a dummy. You still keep your right. And I'll protect your right. But you have no right to do anything to prevent the Negro from going there.
That was Thurgood Marshall speaking at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, in 1956. A little more than a decade later, he was appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, becoming the first African-American on the bench. On Tuesday, February 25th at 5 p.m. at Parkland College, you can take part in a discussion about how the Brown v. Board of Education decision impacted colleges and universities across America. Joining me now is Dr. Lorenzo Baber with the College of Education at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Dr. Baber, welcome to Illinois Soul and Dialogue.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the Brown v. Board decision, which a lot of people know about the spotlight on elementary and high school education in the United States, but what did it mean for colleges and universities?
Yeah, great. So really the Legal Defense Fund and the Brown versus Board case, there were a couple of cases earlier that helped set up Brown versus Board that specifically targeted colleges and universities. So Sipwell versus University of Oklahoma and McLaurin in 1948, as well as Sweet or Sweat versus the University of Texas in 1950. Both attacked, challenged the separate but equal doctrine that was established, especially through Plessy Ferguson in 1896. Which at that point had established in post-secondary two different institutions, one for black residents or citizens and one for white, as in the shadows of Plessy versus Ferguson. So those cases, and the reason the NAACP focused on higher education first is because at that time states would actually, in the southern region, those that had two different institutions did not have graduate education at those institutions. And so if a black citizen in the state wanted to pursue a graduate degree in a southern state, they would either have to pursue it out of state, or in some cases, the state would actually pay for them to go out of state. And so that separate but equal doctrine was challenged there, especially around graduate education, because those institutions that we now consider or call historically black colleges and universities didn't have graduate education. And so the Legal Defense Fund and Thurgood Marshall challenged that to say there isn't a separate facility. And then when they tried to build, like University of Texas actually tried to build a law school at the same time the litigation was happening, it wasn't equal to the University of Texas Austin Law School. So again, separate but equal was unconstitutional because there wasn't equal facilities for those for black citizens in those states. And so that kind of predated the Brown versus Board and helped kind of lay the foundation for that.
In your studies, give me a picture of what the racial makeup looked like at predominantly white institutions like Illinois and others prior to the Brown v. Board decision.
Yeah, and then in the states like Illinois, there were some, we have evidence of some black graduates that actually predate the Brown versus Board decision, but very, very small, very few isolated cases. And so after both the Sipwell and Sweet case, as well as the Brown versus Board cases, you saw more folks enrolling in places like the University of Illinois. Now, specifically to Brown versus Board, part of that was by desegregating legally and then in practice secondary schools. It allowed for access to better resource high schools, which then, of course, allowed more and more people from different backgrounds to apply and be accepted to a place like the University of Illinois. So that's where you see the connection between Brown versus Board and post-secondary education, is that it really created an opportunity for equitable access to well-resourced high schools. Now, of course, we know that that didn't always apply over time, and you start to see, especially with the consideration of all deliberate speed, right, which is a part of the Brown versus Board decision, that there was very slow progress. And then, of course, from 1954 to about the 1960s, and then you see a shift in kind of other forms of segregation that were aligned with, for example, property rights, right? So we know that secondary and elementary schools, there are tied to the property tax. And so because of redlining, for example, and other forms of housing segregation, you saw a de facto segregation based on those. So it wasn't segregation by law, but it was segregation by practice because of the stratification of other things like housing along racialized lines.
70 years after Brown v. Board, we're seeing an attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, including at universities. What do you make of this moment and having the conversation about this momentous decision and where we stand in America today?
Yeah, I think it's super important to go back. I mean, I know, first of all, you know, we can't talk about the history of our country without talking about all of the history of our country. And so we have a very complex history. We have a very rich history, but it's very complex. And so, yes, we can celebrate the positive aspects and positive momentum from history, but we also have to understand that it's a very complex process, and that in that complexity, we need to understand it so we don't replicate or repeat some of those problems that arose from the past. So I think that's number one. Secondly, I think, you know, Brown versus Board was as much about an issue of public education as it was about access for particular citizens, right? So I think in this moment where we're thinking about public education, public higher education, that we need to step back and say, you know, do we still believe that higher education and education in general is a public good? Can we agree on that? That coming out of Brown versus Board, which, by the way, you know, also was in the shadow of the Cold War, and so we're coming out of World War II as kind of the leading democracy in the world. And part of the argument of Brown versus Board was saying, like, if we're a leading democracy in the world, how can we still have legalized segregation, especially in our schools? And so I think that's also an aspect that we need to think about, that this is about what structures did not work for a democracy. And here we are today. Okay, what are the structures that don't work for our democracy in terms of public education? And just like Brown versus Board and the NAACP and Thurgood Marshall, we can go back to the facts. We can go back to the facts of what are the outcomes right now. We know that they are outcomes, and I know higher education specifically, the post-secondary completion rates for Black and Latinx students is low, lower than average. In Illinois, we have about a 56% post-secondary attainment rate among working adults, and that's a short-term certificate or higher. For our Black residents, it's 33%. For our Latinx residents, it's 23%. Those are facts, right? So, but we also know that for Brown County, for example, it's 25%. For Johnson County, it's below 30%. For Pike County, so it's. I think one of the attacks of DEI is that DEI has become, diversity, equity, and inclusion, become a proxy for race. But when you think about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's about the structure and what is not working for particular communities, whether that's we took it from a racialized lens, a geographic lens. And so we have to understand that I care about Pike County as much as I care about our Black residents, our Latinx residents. We got to go in hard on all those things. That's what DEI is. And I think you're seeing a little bit of like the backlash over the last few weeks to say, oh, we didn't realize DEI included this program or that program. Yes, it is inclusive and it's intersectional, right? So it's not just about one particular demographic. It's about a group of demographics that are not being served well by the structure that is in place and how to improve that structure. That was the argument of Brown versus the Board, and that's the argument we still have today based on the outcomes, based on the facts.
Tell me about what's going to happen at Parkland College on the 25th.
Yeah, so we're going to get together next week, and I want to thank Parkland for helping putting on this event, as well as the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and just kind of go through some of the things I've been talking about today in a little bit more detail, and then really fostering a dialogue. So it's not a lecture. There will be some elements of me talking through like some of the things that I talked about today in greater detail, but really we want to have a conversation with the community about, okay, now that we understand what is, let's start locally and thinking about and dreaming about what could be. And there's already great work out there that's happening in our community about what could be. And so it's an opportunity to build that networking, but also expanding that out to thinking through how we can act locally to fulfill the promise of Brown versus Board.
You've been listening to Dr. Lorenzo Baber with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign College of Education. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And you can attend the Unfinished Business of Brown v. Board of Education discussion Tuesday, February 25th at 5 p.m. at the Parkland College cafeteria.
Isaiah Sharkey is a world-renowned guitarist and singer. He's featured on a Grammy-winning album, toured with multiple Grammy-winning artists, and he's coming to the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana on Thursday, February 27th for Uncorked with Illinois Soul. I recently spoke with Sharkey about the upcoming performance and his musical journey. You came from a musical family, so was it from the time you were a kid that you knew you wanted to pursue music as a career?
That's something I just always knew I wanted to do, you know, from the jump. My first memory was a guitar and music, and so that's all I was always interested in.
What is the zone that you get into when you're playing?
What I try to do is capture the moment and be able to be honest and true to the moment of whatever's going on, you know. And that's the fun part. That's the part that is unpredictable and exciting. Me as well as the listeners and people that are, you know, in the room with me. So I don't really think when I play, I just kind of just, you know, go for it and feel it, you know, and be honest and true to the energy in the room and the people.
Did you have any musical influences, and have they shifted at all since you've grown as an artist?
I would say that, yes, I had some of the same musical influences, and it again expanded it, you know, for a long time. It started out with my my mom and my dad and my brothers and sisters and my uncles, of course. From there, you know, at the same time, I was listening to a lot of different music. You know, my grandfather owned a record store. And so my dad acquired all of those records after my grandfather passed on. And every day we would listen to these different vinyls and stuff, from classical music to jazz music to pop, R&B, jazz. Some of my favorites were people like George Benson and Steely Dan and Earth, Wind & Fire and Parliament Funkadelic and Sly and Marvin Gaye and all of these other people, and tons of guitar players, of course. And then you can't forget like Charlie Parker and, you know, all of the greats.
Your first album, Love, Life, Live.
Don't be afraid, baby, to give me all your love. You will get the same.
Was there any inspiration for you in your life to make an album called that?
Nothing could feel better.
I was just inspired by some of the things that I was dealing with and experiencing in life, and then watching other people. And, you know, I wanted to have something that kind of touched on different subjects as it pertains to those three words, you know, loving people, life, you know, in general, what you deal with from day to day, and just choosing to live and choosing, you know, to have an experience and not just exist, but live.
Are there any artists who you found were really fun, or any who were your favorite to collaborate with?
It's kind of hard to say the favorite, because I've been fortunate and blessed enough to be able to play in a lot of different genres with some incredible people. But I would say that I had a really great time working with D'Angelo. Had a great time, and I still have a great time working with Rafael Sadiq. He's very creative on the production side, very creative musically, and just a down-home type of guy. You know, he's really cool and very wise, and you know, full of information.
For the people coming to see Uncorked, especially it being the end of Black History Month, is there anything specific that you want the audience to take away, or anything that you hope to have highlighted?
Well, I think my music is always going to be connected to the to the Black history in general.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm very much influenced by Black Americans, African Americans. And so being an African American, you know, I can't help it. And I grew up in that culture. And so I just want people to get in a space where they can really enjoy themselves, forget about certain things that might be troublesome to them, think about happiness, think about good times, and also hear music, kind of a gumbo of all of the history of the Black music that has been created in this world in general, and hear all my influences, you know, from the blues to all of these different genres. They'll hear a lot of that stuff that I grew up on and still listening to, and it's just fun.
You can catch Isaiah Sharkey performing at Uncorked at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on Thursday, February 27th at 5:30 p.m.
You're listening to Dialogue from Illinois Soul. I'm Reginald Hardwick. The Champaign County African American Heritage Trail hosted its first public bus tour this week. Emily Hayes went along.
This mural stands as a reminder to the aspiration, hope, and...
34 people rode the bus around town, stopping at key landmarks that highlight the history of African Americans in the area. Estella Sammy led the tour for Experience Champaign-Urbana, the official tourism organization for Champaign County. She says it's important to keep Black history alive as the Trump administration takes down federal websites related to race.
Now it's up to us. If other people are going to try and silence this, erase it, make it so people don't know, it's up to us as people, as community members, to show it.
Sammy was especially upset last month after the Air Force removed training videos featuring the Tuskegee Airmen. They were the nation's first Black pilots who trained near Rantoul. The agency put the videos back online after bipartisan criticism. Experience Champaign-Urbana is planning to host public bus tours every few months, as well as private ones. I'm Emily Hayes with IPM News.
That's all for this week's Dialogue. Our team includes host and producer Kennedy Vincent, Ariel Ravini, Zany Qureshi, Kimberly Schofield, and yours truly, Reginald Hardwick. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are part of Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Let's leave you now with more from guitarist Isaiah Sharkey, who is performing at the Uncorked concert at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on February 27th.